I'm Savannah Hutka with Hutka Farms in Westphalia, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Texas farmers are suing USDA over the most recent disaster aid program. We'll have more on that coming up to kick off today's show.
By diversifying their crop mix, farmers often find both economic and agronomic benefits. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
Senate Ag Republicans say they're working to put more farm in the Farm Bill. I'm Jessica Dolmel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. The Southeastern Legal Foundation, together with the Mountain States Legal Foundation, has filed a motion for preliminary injunction in an Amarillo federal court to stop USDA from funneling disaster and pandemic relief funds to certain farmers based on race and sex.
It couldn't be more clear that this is discrimination. It's written into the regulations that are being administered by the United States Department of Agriculture. So Congress set aside over the last few years about $25 billion for disaster relief to help farmers affected by natural disasters. And it says nothing about race or sex. It just says go help farmers. But what the United States Department of Agriculture has chosen to do is come up with a funding formula that accounts for the race and sex of the farmer and gives more money to some races and women than others.
That's Braden Busick, Vice President of Litigation for the Southeastern Legal Foundation. The lawsuit is filed on behalf of Texas farmers Alan and Amy West, Brian Baker, and Rusty Strickland.
Absolutely. We represent four Texas farmers, and these are family-run farms. They've been at it for decades. They work hard. They don't take vacations. And like a lot of farmers in that part of the world, extreme heat and drought have really affected their ability to make a living. And this farm aid is really critical for them to remain in the business and to help support their businesses. They shouldn't be faced with the even more daunting hurdle of having to sue the federal government just to have the same access as farmers of other races and sexes.
Busick says they're asking the court to issue an injunction to pause the program immediately until there is time to reach a final ruling.
And we've asked the judge to move quick, requesting what's called a preliminary injunction, where he'll take a immediate look at it. And if he goes our way, he will pause the program, or at least the discrimination in the program, until he reaches a final ruling. We hope that that happens within a month or two. And that gives us time to reach a final resolution. But we're really confident in our case. The Supreme Court tells us time and time again that you just cannot consider skin color, except it is absolutely the last resort. And there is no reason to treat farmers differently based on skin color when it comes to disaster relief, especially when Congress obviously wants it based on need, not skin color.
Braden, why did the Southeastern Legal Foundation step into this issue in Texas?
Well, we stand for equality and we stand for the United States Constitution. We think it extends to all Americans, especially the hardworking farmers of America. I mean, we've only recently gotten to be interested in trying to be the lawyers, the constitutional lawyers for America's farmers. But a lot of your listeners probably remember back in 2021 when the administration immediately tried to forgive the loans of every single farmer based on their race. And we were one of the groups that stepped in and immediately halted that program. And that really opened our eyes to the various ways in which America's farmers are having their constitutional rights violated each and every day. So we really want to be the constitutional law firm for America's farmers. And we know the mistreatment that each and every one of them suffers and how hard it is to be a farmer in 2024.
That's Braden Busick, Vice President of Litigation for the Southeastern Legal Foundation. Time is running out for Texas dairy farmers to enroll in the Dairy Margin Coverage Program for the 2024 year.
DMC offers protection to dairy farmers when the difference between the all milk price and the average feed price falls below a dollar amount selected by the producer. To enroll, contact your local USDA service center. The deadline to do so is April 29th. Additional details about the Dairy Margin Coverage Program are available at farmers.gov. Again, that deadline is April 29th. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Dolmel.
The King Ranch in South Texas has acquired a 50% stake in Cobalt Cattle, the nation's fourth largest cattle feeding operations with six feed yards in Colorado, Kansas, and Texas. King Ranch CEO Robert Hodgen says the acquisition represents the next step in King Ranch's long-term strategic vision to participate throughout various sectors of the beef industry. Hodgen says the goal is to align with partners like Cobalt Cattle to consistently bring nutritious and delicious beef to the American consumer. Farmers can find both economic and agronomic benefits by diversifying their crop mix. James Hunt has more from Amarillo.
Today, we return to my conversation with Dale Artho, who farms in Deaf Smith, Oldham, and Randall counties. His crop mix includes mainstays like corn, sorghum, cotton, and wheat, but Artho says some new things were added in a few years ago.
My son decided that he wanted to come back and farm, and I said, sure, that's great. Just figure out how to make it work. So his business model was he built a malt house. So he malts small grains, barley and wheat and rye, and he malts sorghum. And so we have that crop mix in our winter and in some of our spring. We've already got our spring barley planted and it's up. And so those have been some of the major changes. Growing barley and rye were not historically something that I did.
So where are you finding the market for those?
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing. As you know, with any business model, when you develop it, you have highs and lows and interesting problems that arise. Most of the barley that he malts goes into microbreweries and goes to distilleries, and the rye, most of it goes into the distillery market.
It's good to have buyers for what's produced with new crops, but there can be other benefits. Dale Artho says one of those new crops, barley, seems to do a good job of helping what gets planted next.
It's a fun crop to plant behind because I don't know what it's doing inside of the soil or for the microbes and that flora and fauna of the soil health, but it's doing something, and we sure like the transition of planting barley to cotton especially. It's beneficial to us for that rotation.
Dale Artho talks about water challenges in our next report. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Senate Ag Republicans say they're working to put more farm in the Farm Bill. Jessica Domel has the details.
Leading Republicans on the Senate Agriculture Committee unveiled a new bill Tuesday that they say will strengthen crop insurance and make higher levels of coverage more affordable for American farmers. The Federal Agriculture Risk Management Enhancement and Resilience Act, or Farmer Act, was introduced on the Senate floor by Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota. Hoeven is working to include the legislation in the Farm Bill.
Essentially, what it does is it puts more farm in the Farm Bill. And that's what we need to do to get this Farm Bill passed.
Hoeven says the Farmer Act would strengthen crop insurance in two ways.
One, it strengthens crop insurance by increasing the premium support, making it more affordable to purchase crop insurance. And two, it enables our farmers to insure to a higher level. And there's two ways that they do that. One is at the enterprise level. So at the farm level, they buy crop insurance. This makes it more affordable to buy up to a higher level of coverage, say 80 or 85% coverage on a more affordable basis. And then they can get a second tier policy that helps them. It's called supplemental coverage option. And that's actually based on a countywide average. And so they can buy that supplemental coverage to insure up to a higher level, up to 90% on a realistically affordable basis. Now, the other thing it does is it calls on the Secretary of USDA, the Secretary of Agriculture, to look at this supplemental coverage. And for states that have big counties like my home state of North Dakota or Senator Bozeman's state of Arkansas, Texas, and others, it requires that RMA, risk management agency that provides crop insurance, that they look at how these policies are done to make it work better for states that have large counties, which many of our states do. So those are the kind of enhancements to crop insurance that really serve our farmers. And it's not just our farmers. We're also doing more for our ranchers, our livestock producers. But really, it's much more than that. This legislation helps our farmers, it helps our taxpayers, and it helps all Americans.
Hovind explained that by strengthening crop insurance, it helps keep farmers in the game for the long term. He said that benefits taxpayers because we have the highest quality, lowest cost food supply in the world. And he said this is the most effective way to keep the network of family farms and ranches out there on the land. The legislation is supported by the American Farm Bureau Federation and several other agricultural organizations. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Results of a USDA study on long-term global agricultural productivity and sustainability dating back to the 1960s. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have a report on the sixth decade findings on Texas Ag Today.
And there's some new research on improving the success rate of AI in sheep. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories, plus a look at the markets, are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include, but are not limited to, livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Now back to more Texas Ag Today.
USDA released a study on the past 60 years of sustainability in American agriculture. Tom Nicoletti takes a look at the report.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently issued a report looking at how global production of agricultural commodities has grown and developed over a six-decade period. This dates back to the 1960s. USDA's Economic Research Service conducted the study. Here is research economist Keith Fugley.
What this report tries to do is look at broad trends in global agricultural production, resource use, and productivity, how productive those resources employed in agriculture have been from 1961 all the way up to 2020. Global agricultural output increased by about fourfold.
According to the report, the gross value of global agricultural output grew from $1.1 trillion, that's trillion with a T, dollars, at the beginning of the study period, to $4.3 trillion by 2020. Also changed between 1961 through 2020 was increased diversity of ag products.
So some of the traditional things like cereal grains, they're actually a smaller share of that total output today than they were in prior decades. What has grown are oil seeds, fruits and vegetables, non-ruminant livestock like poultry and pork, and then especially we've seen huge growth in farm-raised fish, or what we call aquaculture. The location of where that output is coming from has really shifted from what we call in the report the global north. That's kind of the high-income countries of North America, Europe, and then Asia Pacific, like Japan and Australia. And it's shifted to the global south, Latin America, Africa, and the rest of Asia.
That is research economist Keith Fugley with USDA's Economic Research Service. I'm Tom Nicoletti at the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
There's some new research on improving the success rate of AI in sheep. Dr. Bob Judd takes a look at the study.
Dr. Taylor Penny from the University of Queensland indicates in the Shepherd publication that artificial insemination, or AI, in sheep is not as successful as in many other animals. The research will specifically look at the biochemical interactions between previously frozen sperm and the cells in the sheep's cervix. Dr. Penny indicates that if they can figure out what is going wrong in the normal physiological interaction, they can then identify biological pathways to intervene and improve pregnancy rates. The advantage of artificial insemination in sheep is the same as other animals, as it allows producers to breed their ewes to better quality rams without actually having to purchase the ram, but only purchase the semen. Also, this decreases the problem of biosecurity that can be a problem when you have to bring new rams into your herd, as they could also bring disease. With AI, it is much easier to select for animals that will have improved traits like increased wool and meat yields. Also, AI would allow a producer to select for animals that have reduced climate impact and an enhanced capacity to cope with climate change. It is reported only 5% of the sheep in Australia are bred using artificial insemination, compared to 85% of their dairy cows that are bred by AI. Dr. Penny indicates AI in the dairy industry has allowed for rapid genetic improvements in cows, while the sheep industry has been restricted to a much slower process through natural mating. Research into the low success of non-surgical AI is not new, but results have been inconsistent. Some research has indicated that several factors that affect AI success include breed of the ewe, the ewe's age, and timing of the AI.
I'm veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include, but are not limited to, livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses, such as temporary pastures, will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Thursday. We had an up and down trade in cattle futures on both sides of the market. When it all shook out on the close, we ended up higher in both live and feeder cattle. April live cattle up $1.17 at $180.25. June up $1.05, $173.90. With August live cattle up 80 cents, 171.45. April feeder cattle up 90, closing at 239.17. May feeders up $1.62, 238.15. With August up $1.35, 248.95. Cash fed cattle sales still slow for the week. We've seen just a trickle come in. The most recent report, 2,500 head in Kansas, selling at 182. Here in the Southern Plains, we've seen bids from the packers as high as 182, but feedlots asking 186 so far. Boxed beef prices higher, choice up 42 cents, 298.65, select up $1.11 at 297.13. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
My guest today is Phil Brockenbush, Giddings Livestock. They sell every Monday. Phil, how was that last sale?
It wound up good, Larry. We wound up with 1537.
Walk the pens with me.
All right, your steers, 300 and back, average 338 to 415. 300 to 400 pound steers, 302.5 to 410. 4 to 5 weights, 272 to 330. 5 to 6 weights, 247 to 277.5. 6 to 7 weights, 235 to 260. 7 to 8 weights, 221 to 256. Your heifer mate, 300 and back, average 311 brought up to 410. 3 to 4 weights, 273 to 405. 4 to 5 weights, 253 to 292.5. 5 to 6 weights, 235 to 315. 6 to 7 weights, 218 to 252.5. 7 to 8 weights, 193 to 270. Your bull yearlings, 7 to 850 pounds, $2 to 256. 850 to 1,000 pounds, 140 to 245. The high yielding bulls, 150 to 170. Medium yielding bulls, 130 to 145. The high yielding cows, 130 to 149. The medium yielding cows, 120 to 129. The little thin cows, $1 to $1.19. We had some pretty good pairs. They brought from 1,200 to 2,850. The bred cows from 700 to 2,350.
Do we know of anything for the next sale?
We got a couple of sets of cows coming. There's a set, I think there's 20 or so first calf heifers. They're kind of Angus plus. And then there's, I think, 25, just kind of some crossbred cows, you know, some really good young cows. They're acreage is kind of a little bit of everything. And then there's 100 cows, I believe, coming that's just some crossbred cows. It'll be mainly bred cows on them, I believe.
Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, Phil.
Yes, sir. You can call me at 979-716-4395 or call the barn at 979-542-2274.
Neighbor, looks like that's it for this edition of Walking the Pens here on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. I'm your host, Larry Marble. Thanks for listening.
Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finish mixed. The nearby April down 30 cents, 91.50. May hogs up 75 at 97.30. Class 3 milk was lower. April milk down 17 cents, 15.39 a hundredweight, with May down 57 at 16.09 a hundred. Cotton would seem to close higher after we had a decent export sales report Thursday morning and a slightly positive WASDE report from USDA. That was not the case, however. We ended up closing sharply lower, with the May contract down 194 points, 83.37, July cotton down 182, 85.25, with new crop December cotton down 74 points, 80.69. Corn closed lower following that USDA WASDE report Thursday morning. USDA lowered its estimate of U.S. ending corn stocks from 2.17 billion bushels down to 2.12. Of course, it lowered, but it was not as big a reduction as analysts were expecting. As a result, May corn was down 5.5, 428 and three quarters. July corn down 4.75, 441 a bushel, with September corn down 4.25 at 450 and a half. Wheat closed lower after USDA increased its estimate of U.S. ending wheat stocks from 673 million bushels up to 698 million. That's more than expected and the highest level in 3 years. May Kansas City wheat down 11.25, 583 and a quarter. New crop July down 9.25 at 578 and a half. July Chicago wheat down 7.25, 566 and a quarter. In the energy markets, May natural gas down 11 cents, $1.76. May West Texas crude down 58, 85, 63 a barrel. The financial markets were higher. The Dow up 87 points, 38,548. The NASDAQ up 293 at 16,463. The S&P up 47 points, 5,208. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A. Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.